Today, on this episode of the PeerDirect Special Spotlight.
Really nice real-world study, and I think that this is the stuff that retina specialists are looking for more than clinical trials, is what can I expect from real-world treatment for my patients?
Today, Drs. Vakari and Danzig join the podcast to discuss new data on risk factors and treatment regimens for patients with neovascular AMD and DME in this PeerDirect Specialist Spotlight. All opinions expressed are those of the presenters and do not necessarily reflect the views of this educational initiative's supporters.
Hello, I'm Dr. Priya Vakaria, a retina specialist from Tampa Bay, Florida.
And I'm Dr. Carl Danzig, a retina specialist from Fort Lauderdale, Florida.
Thank you for being here with me, Carl.
Happy to join, Priya.
So, Carl, we recently attended the American Academy of Ophthalmology, or AAO, annual meeting, and there were really great abstracts there presented, but I'd like to spend a few minutes discussing a few. So why don't we begin with the late breaker that Diana Doe presented on the IRIS registry study of aflibercept 8 milligram in patients with neovascular AMD and DME.
I really love this study, Priya. It's a real-world discussion looking at 8 milligram aflibercept and switch patients. So it also included treatment naive. So it included over 1,300 treatment naive patients with wet AMD and 382 treatment naive with DME, and over 8,300 of patients with wet AMD and over 2,200, almost 2,300 patients with DME who are already receiving aflibercept 2 milligram. So we have a robust amount of patients that were all switched to aflibercept 8 milligram, and patients were followed for a mean of 58 weeks, so over a year. This is really great follow-up. And amongst the treatment-naive subjects, the injection interval was approximately 12 weeks in both the wet AMD and DME groups. Now, we know that in the real world, not everyone's treating the same way we do in a clinical trial with tolerance of subretinal fluid, and you know there are certain criteria in these trials. But nevertheless, this presentation from Diana really illustrated, you know, great effect. And the eyes that were treatment naive, they gained an average of 4 letters in the wet AMD population and 5 letters in the DME population, about one line in each of these groups that switched to 8 milligram. So patients who switched to the higher aflibercept dose also derived benefit with an extension of their injection interval by about 2 additional weeks and remained visually stable. So this is great. So patients received fewer injections, longer, you know, intervals, and their vision was maintained. So additional analyses with longer follow-up periods, well, they're ongoing to assess the long-term effectiveness and durability of aflibercept 8 milligram in the treatment-naive and previously treated patient population with wet AMD or DME in the real world.
Carl, that was a really great summary of, you know, a really nice real-world study. And I think that this is the stuff that retina specialists are looking for more than clinical trials, is what can I expect from real-world treatment for my patients? And so how does this study specifically influence your decision to treat with aflibercept 8 milligram or switch patients to aflibercept 8 milligram?
This really gives me the confidence in a real-world study that pretty much mirrors the clinical trial in terms of results. Now, granted, the clinical trial for wet AMD did not allow previously treated patients, but put that aside, we look at the treatment-naive visual gains in the real-world study by Dr. Doe, and that mirrors what we saw in the clinical trial. Now, what I also like is the fact that I'm able to tell patients that, you know, with this robust amount of patients, we have good safety, and we can now switch them, and we can hopefully gain a few extra weeks between injections. And even if we extend them by 2 extra weeks over the course of a year, that's a couple fewer injections than they normally would get. And that makes the patients happy because these patients have lives. You know, they go away for the holidays. They may travel to see their family elsewhere. And also life gets in the way. So having a medication that can keep them stable, keep their vision stable, and keep their independence and keep them out of our office more makes them happy.
Perfect. So let's switch direction and talk about a study that looked at sleep apnea and the risk of age-related macular degeneration. So this was a study that looked at Mendelian randomization analysis. Do you want to summarize this, Carl?
Right. So it went to investigate the temporal and causal associations between sleep apnea and AMD. And this is something that we don't really discuss with our patients. You know, in residency, we're taught about, you know, floppy eyelid syndrome and sleep apnea and go get a sleep study. And retina specialists, we kind of went to retina and we don't ever talk about that. But I think we're going to come back to talking about sleep apnea because of the results of this study. And I think it should be in our armamentarium of knowledge. But sleep apnea was associated with a significantly increased risk of incident AMD with consistent findings in the Caucasian subgroup. And Mendelian randomization analyses using 34 genetic instruments for sleep apnea supported a causal relationship. So this provides both an epidemiological and genetic evidence suggesting sleep apnea as a modifiable risk factor for AMD. And it calls for further studies to validate the observed causal relationship. So how are you going to talk to your patients knowing this?
You know, I'm going to approach this with a little bit of skepticism because I feel like every few months I hear of something that's associated with AMD. I think that it's important for us to identify these relationships. But as you said, Carl, I think the key is we need more studies to truly identify a causal relationship. But this study was a really nicely done study, and I definitely think is something that brings up a really good question, which is, should I be asking my patients about whether they snore at night? Should I be encouraging them to get a sleep study? I think it's something that I'm going to start asking them about now. But again, I still want to see more studies into this before I totally change my practice patterns. But really, really nice study that was done. And let's move on and discuss another presentation about AI-guided anti-VEGF therapy. This was a non-inferiority study of an AI-guided regimen for neovascular AMD compared to standard of care in a prospective multicenter study over 12 months. Carl, do you want to summarize this study?
So patients with wet AMD were treated when intraretinal fluid and/or subretinal fluid were present on OCT optical coherence tomography. So standard of care was compared with an AI-driven protocol based on fluid volume measured in the central millimeter. Now, primary outcome was a number of injections. Secondary outcome was change in BCVA, best corrected visual acuity, and a total of 289 patients were enrolled. The standard of care cohort received a mean of almost 9 injections, 8.94, while the AI group received significantly lower at almost 6, 5.96 injections to be exact. And what we saw that the treatment-naive patients had fewer injections than experienced patients, and the BCVA difference was 1.99 letters, almost 2 letters, for the standard of care versus AI. So Priya, is AI going to be replacing us?
You know, I think the key here is AI is targeting when we should do injections. And this is such an interesting thought. You know, right now we do this traditional load and then we treat and extend until we see fluid. But this is such a different way to treat patients. This is treating patients when there's fluid and targeting treatment. And I definitely don't think AI is here to replace us. I think that most of us still really like our treat and extend regimen, but this just brings up a really cool treatment protocol. And I think if further refined, could be an interesting thing in practice. Unfortunately, as with all great ideas, it only pans out in the real world if it comes down to the ability to integrate that into clinic. But I think it was a really nice study that brings up some interesting points. You know, Carl, how do you see this?
I find it so interesting because you have an AI-driven treatment protocol that looks at fluid and presence of intraretinal, subretinal fluid. However, we have phase 3 clinical trials for extended dosing molecules, whether it's faricimab or 8 milligram aflibercept, that allows the presence of fluid for maintenance or even extension, perhaps, of these extended dosing regimens. So they kind of, you know, well, what are you going to do if you have this AI-driven formula that goes against that? And, you know, how we do all of this in the real world is truly the question, because it probably lies somewhere in the middle in how we're treating these patients.
I think that's a really, really great point that you brought up there. And as with all things, we'll see how it rolls out as with more studies. But thank you, Carl, for speaking with me about some of these interesting abstracts from AAO 2025.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. Thank you, Priya.
And thank you so much to our audience for watching.
And that's today's Specialist Spotlight. Thank you for joining us for this episode of PeerDirect Medical News Podcast. For more stories like these, visit us at peerdirect.com. Thoughts, comments, or suggestions? Please leave us a review on your preferred listening platform or email us at editorial@peerdirect.com. Listen and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also download our Amazon Alexa Flash Briefing Medical News Roundup and just ask, "What's my Flash Briefing?" Thanks today to our guests, Drs. Vakharia and Danzig. Join me next time for the episode where we cover the latest stories in the world of medicine.